Fellas, it is awfully hot outside currently. Way too hot for my liking.
It is awful. Like, I took Scarlett outside to use the bathroom and play with her like I normally do out at the academy. We were outside for under 5 minutes. She literally picked up her ball and went to the door.
Like, oh, my gosh.
Let me back inside.
In fact, so hot that she is wearing her special pup Crocs that she has because the ground is so hot. Man, those things are pretty cool.
They are. They're made by Wagwear.
Wagwear.
That's right.
Man, that's intense.
Yeah.
So that's pretty awesome. So, well, maybe this episode will be as hot as the temperature is outside. We're hoping it's going to be pretty good. So, but we're super excited to have a guest on with us today on the Shield Armory. And so as we typically do, we don't introduce them. We let them introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about who they are. So we're going to open up the floor to you, man. Let you tell everybody who you are, a little bit about yourself, and then we'll dive into this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Ryan Brady, a police officer here with Roanoke City. Got a beautiful wife, Allison, super supportive of me. We've been married since December of 2019. Fun fact, we got married right before COVID hit. We went on a hike, got married with our pastor, and then COVID hit, and we got to experience the joy of COVID as a newly married couple. But that really just opened my eyes as to how supportive she was, and we were able to grow together, and it's wonderful. Been with the department for about 13 years now, started the academy in 2011, graduated early 2012. Spent some time on patrol, went over to street crimes that then changed over to CRT, and then spent some time on a federal task force before my current assignment, which is with the training academy up here.
Man, you've done a plethora of different things, which is really cool.
You've been around. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Just toured
you're like
around.
Farmers insurance, man.
You know a thing or two.
You've seen a thing or two. Yeah.
And so that probably means you've seen some things change over time, too. You've probably seen a lot of things happen in your tenure.
Absolutely. And kind of one of the favorite stories I tell recruits here, too, because as you go through law enforcement, you guys know it changes daily.
Yep.
The problems we have to address, the problems our community faces that we have to adapt to, they change so regularly. When COVID hit, I volunteered to go back to patrol for a short while away from that federal assignment just to kind of help out with staffing numbers. No one really knew what this COVID thing was. So, you know, we were trying all sorts of different things. And I went back to patrol for a little while, went out of lineup, got in my patrol car, immediately called one of the younger officers out there and said, hey, can you come, like, name somewhere I can meet you real quick, man? I need you to show me how to use this computer, because they had changed the entire operating system on us for the KDTs. And yeah. So he had to walk me through how to check which calls we're holding and everything else on there, how to message each other on there. I didn't know any of that. So,
wow.
Yeah, absolutely. We try to stay up to date.
Been through a lot. So kind of walk us through. This is a little bit off script, but walk us through from the academy. What made you join law enforcement?
Yeah, so went to college. While I was in college, I had a desire to serve my country, so I wanted to go into the military. Unfortunately, an injury I sustained while I was at college prevented me from doing that, and so I figured the next best thing was law enforcement.
Yep.
I had a family member who was in law enforcement with Roanoke City. She spoke highly of this agency. Came in and initiated that process. I had a plan of coming here for a few years until I could get waivers to go join the military, do something through either guard or go full-time active duty. And then once I got here, realized that I loved it, kind of had a knack for it, really enjoyed the aspect of helping people on a daily basis. Even the little small things, just stopping in and talking with somebody, you know, out on patrol. It was kind of intoxicating in the sense that you just, once you've been the person people call for, not, you know, 911 in an emergency, you don't want to go back to the person that has to call 911.
Yeah.
So it was tough to leave that.
Yeah. It's kind of like me. I used to be a firefighter medic, and it was always easy when you're a guy on the one side putting the IVs and the needles in, and you're on the other side. I was like, I don't want one of them. I'm not interested. You
know? Not about it.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So with all that, man, you've definitely you've interacted with a lot of different things in your career, I'm sure.
Sure.
You know, all the different places in the departments you've served and all that kind of stuff. You have, you know, especially in this particular city, interacted with a lot of trauma, you know, encountered a lot of different things, good and bad, right? You know, right. Good and bad things. You've endured a lot of disappointments. You've probably Had some supervisors and coworkers that were probably difficult to work with. You know, that's in every profession. It's not just 100%. Here, but you know, sometimes law enforcement tends to intensify that sometimes, you know. But can you share a little bit about how kind of that side of the journey, how that's affected you?
Yeah, sure. So when I came in, you know, I wasn't entirely sure what to expect. I wasn't one of those people who grew up his whole life thinking I'm going to be a cop and then I'm going to do all this prep work for, you know, what police officers expect. You know, I'd of course seen TVs and movies and stuff and had interacted with police officers throughout my life. So I got a little bit of a glimpse behind the badge, so to speak. But I wasn't really entirely sure what to expect. So once I got out there and started working, pretty similar to most officers, you know, I had the dreams with the 1,000-pound trigger pull and you got to pull your trigger, but it won't go off. Some of that stuff started happening. But I didn't really have a solid system to manage that, which kind of led me to a faith journey. You know, in law enforcement, you know, we have, you know, strict rules, policies, procedures we have to adhere to and follow. But as you guys know, even in regular everyday life and helping with officers and doing ride-alongs and seeing this stuff, there's not always an answer that falls within state code for how you handle every situation.
Yep.
And so what I found is that, like, I lacked a foundation or a background, which ended up being faith, right? I didn't know at the time what it was, but I lacked a foundation from which to address those problems that I was facing, or conundrums, that weren't addressed by policy or procedure, weren't addressed by state law. But, you know, how do I form an opinion on this? How do I, you know, maybe coach other people or other officers through how to handle situations if I don't really have that foundation myself, which kind of led me on a faith journey, which in turn just kind of opened the door to a lot of the ways I was going to handle some of those stressors of the job.
So we talk about the triangle of wellness, that there's mental, physical, and then spiritual. Sounds like mentally you started having those nightmares, those dreams, and address that. Physically, you've always been in pretty good shape, college athlete, had that dialed in, but you found out that you do in fact have to have a moral compass.
Absolutely.
You have to have a spiritual foundation. So to complete that wellness that created and started your faith journey.
Exactly right.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So what did that kind of look like as you were kind of getting on that journey? What did that look like?
Yeah. So I was in a fraternity in college. I had a lot of, you know, close friends that had kind of gone, all of us had kind of, spread out and gone our own different ways in life. And one of them, felt a call to faith as a pastor. And so he went through a seminary in Cincinnati. And while he was going through that seminary, you know, he met another individual who was actually from the Roanoke area. I didn't know this at the time. They developed a friendship and a bond, unbeknownst to me. And then as they graduated from their seminary, my buddy ended up getting a job up in Indianapolis as a pastor, reached out to this guy because this guy had done some work in the Indianapolis area. And that guy was like, actually, I just got a job in Roanoke, Virginia, of all places. And so my buddy who had gone through seminary was like, that's ironic. I've got a really good friend from college who lives in Roanoke, coincidentally enough. And I was starting to develop a hunger and a thirst for faith that I didn't really know what it was at the time. It began as curiosity in my mind. I read Mere Christianity, which was super impactful to me. I started listening to my buddy's sermons online, which was really the only exposure I had because I wasn't attending church regularly. I wasn't listening to the word. I wasn't reading the Bible. And so I was just listening to those. And he kind of knew, picked up a little bit on the fact that that I had a hunger or a thirst for that knowledge, right? And so it all culminated. We talked about the dreams with the 1,000-pound trigger and all this. I had a dream one night, and I was on patrol. I could drive to the building that was in my dream because it was a real building. Mm. I had been there before for calls, and I was there for some type of call. I showed up. I was in uniform as a police officer in my dream. I opened the door, talking to the guy that was there, and he said, "Do you know God?" And I said, "Yeah, I think." And he goes, "No, you would know." And I was like, "Oh." And in the dream, he said, "It feels like this." And my entire dream went milk white. My hair stood up on my arms, and it was the most euphoric feeling I've ever felt in my life. And from that day, I was like, I will spend the rest of my life chasing God, 100%.
Wow.
Started attending church with Pastor Seth over at New Hope. He's the one who met my buddy in seminary and came down as a pastor here. And
that's crazy.
Been on that journey ever since.
Wow. Man. I don't actually think I've heard that part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
That's
absolutely.
That's like a Saul to Paul experience.
It was, I've never been more convicted of anything in my life when I woke up from that dream to immediately make a 180 degree change and chase something. So
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yep.
That is way cool. Yeah. Man, that is awesome.
Certainly makes a chaplain heart feel good. Yeah. God stepped into your life. You clearly acknowledged it and said, Roger up. And sure. You made a change.
And it hasn't always been perfect, right?
Yeah.
We all fall short, and I try every day. But it opened up a pathway for me to handle the rigors of the job and in a way that I feel like has been healthy for me. Ever since then, you know, things that have happened or whatever, of course, everything's relative. Trauma's relative to everybody. So something that may seem menial to one person may be absolutely life shattering to someone else. But it's really that faith journey is what kind of kicked off my mindset of how I approached things that would happen in work and life and so on and so forth.
That's a lot of the reason why you're here today.
Absolutely.
For us, kind of somewhat on the outside, we get to share a facility with you on a constant basis, get to see you interacting with students. We have seen your hunger and thirst for the Lord. Mm-hmm. We have seen that growth that, hey, I'm convicted by this. I'm going to level up. I'm going to deal with it. And that's so cool for us to see. You're knocking down those objectives and working through it. But one of the things that I think we have seen very consistently is that despite the environment, you were typically positive. Mm-hmm. That is not normal for law enforcement. In some regards, you stick out like a sore thumb.
Sure.
In a good way.
I've been told that before.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not just because you're tall.
Yeah. It's not always in context to how I handle things. Yeah.
I think we have seen a plethora of examples. Now, there's people that fake it and it's chintzy. It's not real. It's not authentic. Authentically, you make a choice to live on the positive side of that spectrum. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to just press into that because that is not normal. And I think it could help some guys because you seems like you've walked in their moccasins. You understand the negativity and you're choosing to do something different with it.
Sure. Yeah. So for me, it was always just a when I started the academy, we had an instructor and he kind of really instilled in us positive mental attitude. So it started with that. I didn't always handle things as well as I do now. It's certainly been a growth and I'll get into this in a minute, but it's a skill that you have to hone. And I practice it all the time. And I encourage others to do the same. I'm not always really good at it. So by no means am I some like subject matter expert on this, but, if I can share the way that the mindset, that I use and help anybody, I really hope it has that effect. But it started as that positive mental attitude, because to me, that was always the one thing that no one can ever take away from you, because it lives between your ears. So no matter what people say or do to you, whatever happens to you in life, whatever or conflicts you have, whatever bad situation you feel you may be in, your attitude about how you address that is the one thing that no one can ever take from you. It's not a tangible thing that someone can reach in and grab. It's a mindset of how you look at the things in front of you. And really what that manifested in ultimately was gratitude. And I think what really opened my eyes to that initially was the beginning of that faith journey, right? You know, I'd sat down with my pastor prior to getting baptized and stuff. And we had talked about things, read through numerous scripture, just discussing kind of the choice I had at hand and what I was going to do. One of the scriptures, and I'll read it here, I wrote it down, is Romans 6:23, the wages of sin is death. But the free gift of God is eternal life in Christ Jesus our Lord. And that, to me, that unlocked some other things that I had learned kind of secularly about gratitude was, you know, when we think about gratitude, a lot of times it's something we've been giving that we maybe didn't earn or that we didn't pay for. And that's the ultimate gift, right? That's the ultimate thing that was given to us. Mm-hmm. And so looking at it through that lens of gratitude, I was like, what else can I look at through this lens? And so gratitude became more of a lens than just a practice. So instead of just like, I'm thankful for my wife, I'm thankful for my dog, I'm thankful for this meal that my wife cooked or the roof over my head when it's raining outside. And that's great stuff to do, but I started to really kind of use gratitude as a lens, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Kind of what you're saying is, so those things are good. I mean, those are blessings and you're noting them.
Sure.
But what you're saying is based on that foundation of scripture, you've developed what we call a worldview, a way in which you interact with the world. You have chose to use scripture as part of your worldview.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like I said, like that gratitude that came from it was just like, an ember falling into, you know, dry twigs. And it was from there, it just caught on. And so it's kind of like if I said, hey, be on the lookout for a white Kia. All of a sudden you see Kias everywhere,
yep.
Right? And so the minute I started thinking about gratitude in that way, I saw opportunities to look at the world through that lens. And like I said, I'm not always good at it. So I'm not tooting my own horn here saying that I'm like some mentally sound person that just always, you know, focuses on the up and up about everything. I certainly have down times, but one thing I heard a basketball coach say one time was gratitude is a skill. And I looked at it like that and I said, okay, is a skill like any other skill in life? If I took you three, I don't know if any of you guys are golfers. I play a lot of golf, but if I took you out on the first tee box and I said, all right, score birdie on this hole, it'd probably be pretty tough. It's tough for most of us, but yeah. It'd be really tough for you guys if you don't practice golf, right? And so gratitude, I think, is the same way. If you tell someone, be grateful for what you have or think about what you're grateful for, yeah, they can do it a little bit, but it's probably going to be tough to use that as a mantra and like a lens through which they look at life, right, without practice.
Yeah.
And so regular practice of that is really what helps. And I, the last two or three recruit classes up here, I've had them write it in their notebooks. And what I tell them to write down is gratitude is a skill. It can be honed. If you focus on what you lack, you lose what you have. If you focus on what you have, you lose what you, or you gain what you lack. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we do a little writing exercise where they take three or four things that have happened to them in their life that they see as challenging maybe. And how can we readdress that through a lens of gratitude and rewire our brains, so to speak, to think about that in a different way.
It's so good that you are bringing that up, because it's, again, you mentioned, of course, you know, I can give thanks, you know, I can have an attitude of gratitude that I've got a wife who's very faithful to me and it's been a wonderful life partner. I can give thanks that I have two guys that I work with that are amazing. I'm part of the Shield team. But it's different when, I went somewhere in recent days where I wasn't allowed in with Scarlett, and that was a very negative thing. I was soundly and firmly rejected because of having Scarlett, and it hurt. And when I first left there, to be honest with you, I was pretty ticked at first. But then I thought about it. I'm like, okay. Hey God, thank you for allowing me to experience rejection in a very firm way like that. What does this reveal about me?
Mm-hmm.
What do I need to learn from this? And that's what, if I'm hearing you right, that's what you're saying. It's not just being grateful for those good and happy things, but looking through that lens at every situation with a sense of gratitude. Am I reading you right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a little bit of empathy involved with that gratitude as well. Thinking about others, putting others before yourself a lot. Because I would look at that situation that you just described, right? And I would think to myself, you know, it stinks that happened, right? But maybe you going through that helps that place that maybe denied you entry there a chance to refine their process so that maybe somebody that's having a really bad time, or, you know, they've got a service dog because of a lot of bad things that are happening in their life, and that's the way they get through life. Maybe that refined process helps someone else since you went through it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Wow. That is what you do every day in life, which is why you're here today.
100%. 100%.
That, my friends, was Exhibit A.
Yeah.
Well, so. And I love the point that all of this is pushing to. Not only the most important fact is the foundation that it all comes from is obviously the most important thing, but the fact that you're, I know that the three of us tell officers on a regular basis, this process that you are living out is a choice.
Absolutely.
Like you could live in the negativity. You could live in the situation that Darren and Scarlett just got rejected and just live in the fact that just sucks,
mm-hmm.
You know, cause it, you call it what it is. You know, that's what we tell officers all the time. We're going to call something bad, whatever it is, but we don't have to stay there. And that's a complete 100% personal choice that you don't have to stay in that.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly right.
What would you say to an officer? Put you on the spot a little
sure,
bit.
Yeah.
If, because what I hear you saying is that the whole reason why you are the way you are is because of your spiritual foundation.
Sure.
And arguably, we all have cracks in that and we're trying to shore those up.
Mm-hmm.
But we have consistently seen you go back to that and choose to be positive. What would you say to an officer that doesn't have a faith foundation?
Yeah, I would say that it's going to be really tough for you to move forward without that. I think you're gonna have really good times where you feel like you got it all figured out, and then you're gonna have times where the realization that you don't have everything figured out is gonna slap you in the face. And I know because I lived that. Mm. I had times where I knew everything and I had unlocked it and I was good to go, and then something would happen outside of my control, and that would slap me in the face, and I would have absolutely no way of managing that and mitigating it. So I don't say everyone has to like mandated to follow my faith exactly, right? I certainly spread the good news of Jesus to everyone I can and hope that everyone will come to that light. But I would say that if you do not have any faith foundation at all, explore that. Leave yourself open to it. Be hungry, be thirsty, and develop your foundation. That would be my recommendation.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We recommend that as well, as you can imagine.
yeah, you guys do.
But it does come different from an officer.
Sure.
So from not having a faith background, not having that, and arriving and going, there's a God-shaped hole in my heart, and I keep trying to fit stuff in it, and it don't work. Mm-hmm. That's a good recommendation. So thank you.
Absolutely, yes.
You know, this our first season of the Shield Armory, we had a couple of episodes on the topic of negativity, and then that's part of, you know, you have to deal with the ugly side before you can talk about the good side. You got to realize there's a problem before you can find the solution, right? And that's what we always say. And so obviously in your life of living a life of gratitude, you've also got to be able to deal with the negativity that comes in. So, mm-hmm. so let me just ask you, because, and just being real, you know, how does the negativity affect you? You know, because obviously when you're at work, you're Ryan Brady, the police officer. When you're home, you know, your husband, dad, and all the different roles, whatever it is, the roles that you feel in your life, whatever that looks like within your circle at home, you know, how does that stuff affect you? How do you draw those lines, and how does that affect you in those two different worlds?
Sure. Yeah. So negativity specifically, the kind of the mantra I go by with that is just that, if you're not a part of a solution, you shouldn't complain about a problem. Mm. And I tell the recruit classes that, like, if you talk to any recruit classes come out since I've been here, I've probably mentioned that to them right before graduation. I tell other officers that too. It's just that, like, you know, things might be negative. People around you might be negative. Doesn't mean you have to be. It doesn't look cool to buy into that stuff. To me, if you're not a part of some solution, if you're not doing anything to address that problem, what right do you have to complain? If I see an officer out there and they're really busting it, trying to fix either a morale issue or they're getting their platoon together, they're trying to do stuff, and they complain a little bit, understandable. I get it. Yeah, we sometimes we lean on those around us to accomplish the mission. That's what we do as police every day. So some of that might be a little bit of a cry for help. But I would encourage everyone, before they think about being super negative about something, start thinking of some solutions. I think that would help greatly. And then that attitude of and that mindset of gratitude, bring that into play as well. Like, think of the things that you're thankful for. Think of everything through a lens of gratitude, not the opportunities we want, but what opportunities do we have? Because you're not always going to get the opportunities you want. But if you focus on the opportunities you have and you move forward in that direction, that's when great things can happen, right?
Yeah. In hearing you talk, two questions. Hmm. What is the root of negativity with law enforcement? I'm aware that other people in life, despite their occupation, can be negative. However, law enforcement has a specific degree of negativity that far surpasses most things. What's the root of that question?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thinking about the root of the negativity in law enforcement, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that we all get into this job because we want to help people. We want to be helpers. In that, you get a lot of type A personalities who are willing to grab the bull by the horn, so to speak, and take charge and try to solve a problem. Some things can't be solved right away, and it takes teamwork, and it takes you setting aside maybe there's a little bit of narcissism in play, right? Where we think that, you know, we almost like a God complex for an individual, where we think we can do everything, and realizing that sometimes we're going to fall short of that, and we need to readdress that problem from a different angle. And when we can't, and there's frustration there, or we feel like we're not, our ideas aren't being heard or implemented, there's frustration. I'd say that your root comes from an inability to solve a problem at its very root.
So every call for service that you go on, you can't ultimately solve and fix and never mess with it again.
Right.
Wow.
So I just recently rode with an officer, and we were having a conversation about a call that had happened like 4 nights prior to this, the night that I was riding with him. And he said to me, he said, it was the first time that I had encountered someone. He's pretty like positive guy, like just in general, like he reminds me of you in a little bit. He's just, you know, usually pretty positive. He's got a smile on his face most of the time. You know, guys love being around him. He just brings a good aura to the shift, you know? And he said, so the other night he was telling me about this call they were on, and he said, for the first time I encountered somebody who absolutely hated police. Mm-hmm. And he said, man, it just flipped a switch in my brain all of a sudden. He said, because I felt so great about all of this until I finally encountered somebody that genuinely, and he told us he was going to whoop every one of us. And there was a lot of choice words in there that he said, you know, in the process, you know, but he said, I felt really good about everything until that encounter. And he said, so now I'm struggling with the reality of like, my mind was in a different place before that. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm trying to figure out like, how do I not go down that rabbit trail of that now that I've experienced that? What would you say to a guy like that went through that? Because, I mean, this just happened last week.
Sure, so. Yeah. I would say, if we're looking at it through the lens of gratitude, like we talked about, right? Like, I would be grateful for that experience. It may seem frustrating. Like, man, I it really stinks I had to deal with that. And, like, this guy really hates police, and I feel like there's not a solution to this problem. But I'd be grateful because if we're not challenged at work, then we kind of fall into this sense of false security, right? Or complacency, as we say in law enforcement a lot. And so by running into that, and you said that this first time he's experienced that, right?
Yep.
So now, like, I'm grateful for the opportunity that now I can think of a way that I can combat that in the future. And you know, I don't have the answer as to how you deal with somebody like that, because we all may differ in the way that we approach it. And the way I handle it may be incorrect or may not be the same as somebody could do it way better than me. They've got a knowledge set or past experiences that I don't have. But I would say, look at that as an opportunity to grow in your career, because this is a profession. And I tell everyone that comes through the doors here, this is not a job. This is a profession. Like, you should every day wake up, how can I get better at this profession? I'm not here to clock in, take a couple reports, clock out and be done. I want to grow, right? I want to be, and really we should look at it that way, because we want to be the best we can be for our communities. That's who we are. We're community members who step up, put on a badge, wear a gun with the trust of the community to enforce laws and keep safety, public safety. And so I should get better at this job. Like, I shouldn't fall complacent, whether it's in regarding officer safety or whether it's regarding my career. And so I would look at that and say, man, like, how blessed am I to have an opportunity to meet someone like that, to where now I'm prepared, or at least a little more prepared, for the next time I meet someone like that.
Yeah. Wow, man. I'm probably going to listen to this episode like 10 times after it comes out.
Yeah.
People hear it. So I'm going to be honest.
Tell you, I wish you were there about six or eight years ago. For the first time ever, I had that happen to me. Mm-hmm. Talking about the officer, the negativity, the community not liking you. I too have a fire and EMS background, and so typically you like your firefighters. They come and help, right? Yeah. We get to sleep while we work and some other cool stuff. Law enforcement, not so much. Uh-huh. And I was riding with Roanoke City and had chaplain uniform on, and I remember exactly where we were standing, and there was a pretty rough call for service, so I had chose to play with the kids, kind of get them distracted from that. I was out in the front yard, and a mom from across the street came over and said, "We don't play with them," and grabbed all the kids up and took them into the house. And I just stood there. I was like, I'm not even an officer. I'm a chaplain. And she said, "But you work with them." And I got in the car, and I was like, that's generational, that she just instilled, like, that we hate police and those kids. And I'm like unpacking this, and the officer I was riding with was like, "Welcome to the party, buddy."
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And I thought, man, like, that's awful. I wish I'd had somebody like you to be saying, hey, this will prepare you. So we need to reduplicate you. We need to have you on each platoon, right? We need to have you in specialized units and all those assignments so that you can turn people's perspectives. How do we do that?
Well, in a way, I'm here, right? So I get to talk to every officer that's going to be out on the road before they go. So that's helpful. That's one of the reasons I put in to come here, and that I love being here.
Yep.
I love teaching. I coach football as well. And so this, the opportunity to mentor and be around people, and not only just that, right? When I say it's the opportunity to mentor and stuff, it makes me feel like I'm putting myself on a pedestal or something, right? But I also get to learn from those individuals, because they may come in here with a skill set that I don't have for handling things or for managing trauma or for responding to a call. And so I can learn just as much from the people that I interact with and teach here as I can teaching them. And so the ability to be here and interact with so many people that come through the academy's doors, whether it's applicants, recruits, fellow officers, officers from other jurisdictions here attending training, our own officers here for in-service. You know, it's when we teach these classes and we're participating in these things, I like to open up the floor for conversation a bit, whether it's a class I'm teaching to recruits or fellow officers, or I'm just going through training with other officers, because I'd like to learn as much as I'm teaching. If I feel like I've got all the answers and I'm just telling everyone here, like, here's how you do it, here's how you do it, here's how you do it, I'm not growing. And so eventually I'm going to be behind the curve because I'm not keeping up to date with current trends, right? Does that make sense?
It does.
So we always want to, as an academy, we do that too, right? We're always evaluating our processes. Can we get better in the way that we're teaching? Can we adapt our teaching to maybe make better officers or officers that make better choices or make those choices easier on them because of the training they've been through? So being here, it feels like I am in all those units just because I get to talk to all these people that come through. So
that is true.
Yeah.
Well, you have a wide audience for sure.
Let me throw something at you. We've been talking about various scenarios. You just mentioned how much you enjoy being in this role at the academy, being able to invest in the lives of these recruits on the front end before they step out into their careers. And something that we have seen played out time and time again, somebody in a department will be in a role that they like, and they've grown accustomed to, and then they're moved. Mm-hmm. That is not always well received. Let's say this afternoon, you get word that, hey, Brady, we appreciate the work that you've done at the academy, but your time at the academy is over. We're going to move you back to patrol. We want you there. Thanks for what you've done, but we're moving you starting next week. You'll be back on patrol. Walk us through. I know this is hypothetical, but could happen one day, right?
Sure,
I
mean, absolutely.
There's movement like that. Some in a department, it happens all the time. Sometimes that movement is wanted and sometimes it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Walk us through how you would handle that situation.
So my first response would be good. That would be my answer. And the reason I say it like that, and I'm going to circle around a little bit on this, on answering the question. There was a video that Jocko Willink put out, right? Navy SEAL guy, Jocko Willink, if you guys are familiar with him, I'm sure a lot of your listening audience probably is familiar with Jocko. And he put out one called Good. And you could look it up. Good, Jocko Willink, look it up, listen to it. It's great because it deals with a lot of this gratitude and the lens of gratitude more so than just being grateful for things. And so he says that he's marrying a physiological response with his mental conditioning, right? With the way that he's processing these things. And so his initial gut reaction is good. And so by doing that, he's setting a mindset for himself verbally. Because sometimes, and you guys have probably seen it out there, working the road with officers or whatever, what we're thinking shows on our face, yep. Right? And so if we initially respond to something with good, we're conditioning the rest of our response now to follow. Right. And so the way we did this with kids coaching football is we said, hey, all right, look, if you get some type of like punishment PT, you didn't do the things you're supposed to do. And now I'm going to make you do 100-yard wind sprints. Right. Your response for the rest of the season, anytime I say, all right, go toe the line, is you're going to clap. You're going to clap. You're going to cheer for that opportunity to work out and get stronger. And so good is that physiological response of like, okay, I've got opportunities here. And this kind of goes back to our like, what opportunities do we have versus what opportunities do we want? Sometimes the opportunities you want aren't the opportunities you have. So you got to make the most of the ones you have. So I would look at that. If you said, hey, you're going back to patrol, you start Tuesday, you're back on Charlie Platoon, I'm going to say, all right, good. I came from Charlie Platoon. I love Charlie Platoon. Good. That's going to be an opportunity that I get to go out there with all the young men and women that I've taught through the academy, and I get to see how they're doing. I get to watch how they're employing the things that we taught them in the academy. They get to teach me some things that they're doing out there that maybe didn't happen when I was on patrol that are new addresses to different problems. You know, so I would look at it from that. What's my opportunities here? I get the opportunity to go out there and do that and be grateful for it. Right.
Okay. So that's the work end of things.
Sure.
But now you got to go home and you've got to have this conversation with your wife. Hey, babe, I know I've had this schedule that's been very kind of friendly to us.
Sure.
There's going to be nights I'm not here now because I'm back on patrol.
Mm-hmm.
What, if you don't mind, what how do you handle that? How sure. do you walk through that conversation?
Yeah. So, my wife and I kind of practice this together quite a bit. Whenever we face adversity, whether externally, internally, we try to look at it through this lens of gratitude. She's really, really great about this as well. And a great sounding board for me sometimes, cause I'm not always positive. I mean, this is great. I can sit here and say all day long, this would be my response. Sure. Right. And I'm going to try my hardest, but may not always, I may fall short and I may not always do that. And sure. so, she's a really good, cause peer accountability is a big thing to this. Because we won't always have the right guttural response to something. Right. And so, if I'm being a baby about something, I would expect my wife to call me out on it. Similar with my coworkers here. If we're hit with a problem and I whine about it, I would expect Comas or Veal or Camper or LT, one of these people to be like, hey, doesn't matter, get it done, right? Keep me accountable to that lens of gratitude. And we kind of have to do that to each other sometimes, and also put our own narcissism a little aside and be able to take that criticism and that peer accountability. But for my wife, you know, I may start off with something like, hey, listen, I know I'm going back to patrol, but the best thing about patrol is a schedule. Because I never work more than 3 days at a time. And I'm going to have days where I can come eat lunch with you now. I can bring you lunch. I can get yard work done. I can pick up some side work here on these days that I have off, maybe make us a little extra money. I would start off leading with like good opportunities that I have as a result of that, right? Yeah. And an example of kind of like the home life, how we handle these things is my wife had some medical stuff going on. And so we were having to travel for some doctor's visits, and I didn't even really express this to her. I probably should have now that I'm thinking about it. But she was stressed. You know, I was stressed because, you know, we kind of unanswered questions as to what was going on, and we had to go to UVA. And as we're traveling down there, I'm thinking in my head, like, you know, this is unpleasant. This is not great that we have to do this, but like, what a blessing I have in this. Like, we were joking around about, you know, I had to travel through Crozet, which is really nice out there around Charlottesville area. A lot of big houses and farmland and stuff. Oh, yeah. And we're over here just spitfiring back and forth, dreaming about what we'd do if we had a farm like that or land like that. And it was a really cool mental exercise for us to kind of grow together a little bit about like envisioning ourselves in this situation where we have a farm and all this land and can enjoy each other and the land. And I was really grateful for that. And so, even though that was a negative thing that we had to go take care of and do, the positive that came from that, I was grateful for that moment. Had my wife not be dealing with this stuff, never would have had that moment with my wife. I'd have been here all day, been dealing with whatever, you know, things come up at the academy on a daily basis, and I never would have had that opportunity with my wife. That I'll probably remember that forever, because it was just a really awesome time and I loved it. So looking at it through that lens also helps at home.
So just out of sheer curiosity, this has nothing to do with the podcast. Did you spot Dwayne the Rock Johnson's farm when you were up there? Because supposedly he's got a horse farm up in Charlottesville.
I've heard of it. We could have passed it, and I would never have known. If Dwayne listens to this, man, invite me up. I'd love to know if that was one of the ones where my wife and I were dreaming about.
So I've got a question based off of everything we've talked about today. This was not on our outline, but it's just something as we've been talking. So there's a good number of officers that listen to this podcast throughout the Roanoke Valley and beyond. And so I'm curious, like, if an officer's listening to this today and they're thinking, man, I hear what he's saying, and I don't even know where to start. Like, how do I even begin, like, trying to get my mind changed over to that kind of mindset? What would you say to an officer that said, man, if an officer walked up to you face to face and said, Brady, how do I do this, man? Like, where do I begin? What would you tell them?
I would tell them to start with that mental conditioning, right, of that physiological response, good, right, or clapping for PT. Come up with some type of physical response where it conditions the mindset, right? Now, it depends if that officer's in faith or not. If they're in faith, like, pray. And if you're not in faith, like, chase faith, because that's going to lay the groundwork for this, right? Yeah. I'm telling you now, it will come. Yeah. Like, if you meditate on any of this, you meditate in prayer, you read scripture, you think through, and really, really delve into what you're reading off the page there and think about how it pertains to your life. This will naturally follow as a result. If you really buy in, if you're actually listening to hear and not listening to respond, you know, and you really think about this, it'll follow suit. But I would start with one of those physiological responses. Like, anytime somebody says something to me or I get news that I'm not going to like, I'm going to start by just saying good. And that at least groomed them to where now I'm forcing myself to have a thought process because I've already opened my mouth. Because a lot of times that's what we do, right? We're listening to someone. We just want to respond real quick.
Right.
And so come up with whatever your response is going to be. Good. Bring it. Let's go. Whatever it is. Like, let that be your physiological response and let it start your mental conditioning.
Turns out that's pretty biblical. There's a passage in 2 Corinthians that talks about how we demolish strongholds, how we fight back against those attacks as we take every thought captive. That's one of our commands to do. The thought entering in our head is not our decision. We're pretty involuntary with that. But we can choose to take that captive, and that's what you're doing. That's that mental exercise.
Absolutely.
Did you realize that you were negative? Or did the walk of faith just take care of that, or what was that journey?
At times I realized it, right? At times you're like, man, like, because we all do that. We react to something or we act in a certain way and we're embarrassed by it, right? We've all experienced that in some point in our life. Why did I say that? Why did I do that? And so there were times I certainly was. And then the other part was peer accountability. Like people just being like, why are you reacting that way? Like, why are you whining? Like, let's get this done.
Yeah.
And enough peer accountability made me realize how often I was reacting that way. Because we'll catch it, but who knows how many times we didn't catch. Mm. And some of that peer accountability comes into play. And maybe it's spousal accountability. Maybe your wife is like, man, you've seemed really stressed. You seem like you're kind of snapping back at me a little bit lately. You good? That can help us to identify some of that negativity that we don't know is manifesting, right? Yeah. Maybe we're dreading going to work a lot. You're like, it used to be you were really excited to wake up each day and go tackle the city's problems and get in the patrol car and roll the windows down and just listen to the city and kind of figure out, all right, who needs help? What am I going to do today? And maybe now you're like, I'm really dreading going to work. You know, I got 2 hours here. How long can I sleep before I have to go? Like, really not looking forward to it. Maybe that your spouse or significant other, you know, is able to identify some of that stuff with you too.
That's good. That's why we talked about in a previous episode last season on battle buddies, having a group of men and women. And part of the qualifications of a battle buddy is that you don't just paint everything pretty, right? If it stinks, it stinks. We need to hold you accountable, it holds you accountable.
Right.
And that builds warriors, that builds teams, and that's awesome.
Yeah, and I used to tell people all the time, kind of going back to Darren, to your kind of thought exercise there about like, all right, you're getting moved, you know, what's your response to this too? And I used to tell people all the time that before I kind of got into the lens of gratitude, I would say, you know, my advice to people going into these different positions and stuff within their careers or extracurriculars is make yourself indispensable, right? Make yourself so good at this position, whether it's a position you like or not, that they either have to leave you in the position you like or they have to move you to that position you want because of your job performance. And it's a little bit of a trap. Like, it's kind of the way that I used to think about it. It was like, okay, I just got to be really good at this and really, and then they'll never move me or they will move me, whatever it was. But it's a trap because the one thing that brings down that mindset, that gratitude can't be attacked the same way, is what if someone doesn't see you the way you see yourself? So you are in that position. You're like, I'm working my tail off. I'm doing this, doing that. I'm answering emails. I'm sending out, I'm calling meetings left and right. I'm talking to everybody. Why is this not working for me? All it means is that one person just doesn't see you working the way you see yourself working. And that's a trap. So if you look at it through a lens of gratitude and you look at the opportunities you have and you're making the most of those opportunities and you're grateful for the impact you have on the people around you, because a lot of it's interpersonal, then that you find true happiness and joy, because a grateful person is a joyful person.
Man.
I'm about to mull over some of this stuff.
I'm telling you. That's what I say. I'm about to listen to this like 10 times after we're done. I'm about to pick something out every single time I listen to it. So, you know, I just was recently sitting at a lineup table with a group of officers, and one of the officers was he was kind of complaining about some things that were going on, and tend to do that sometimes around the lineup table before you get started and that kind of stuff, you know, and every single thing he was talking about was things he had no control over, like zero control over. And I find it, you know, very interesting how much we allow of ourselves to get tied up into things that we have no control over. And when you find yourself, my assumption, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong, would be when you find yourself in a place of gratitude, you no longer concern yourself with the things that you don't have control over anymore, because you're only worried about the things that are within your sphere of influence at that point.
Absolutely. And that goes back to that positive mental attitude that people can't take away from you. And if that's rooted in gratefulness and rooted in faith, then it's yours forever. No one's ever going to take it from you. Yeah. And life just becomes the next set of opportunities. Every day you wake up is the next set of opportunities. And it's frustrating. Things happen that are frustrating. But like when you start to really look at it through that lens of gratitude, things become a lot less frustrating. Because you're like, man, okay. You know, I spoke to an officer who went through a hardship, you know, fairly recently. And I spoke to that officer and I said, hey, look, you know, I know this stinks that you're going through this. I know it's not ideal. And you're probably struggling with it, but think about this. It's a fairly newer officer. I was like, you know, you're going to have the opportunity now when you become an instructor and when you come to the academy to now impart your experience, because so much of human relation is through storytelling, right? Is you're going to have the ability to now relate to people through your story, through your testimony. Yeah. And that's going to be powerful, because now you're going to maybe prepare someone else to deal with the thing you're dealing with. So as much as it stinks, if you look at it as like, I'm going through this because it's going to help someone else. Yeah. Well, now we're getting right back into why you even got into law enforcement, right? Mm. To help people.
Yeah.
That's so good. I you know, there's things, you know, I have 30 years experience in ministry now. And after my first 7 years in ministry, I was so beaten up and there were a lot of things that were unfair that I endured. You know, there's probably some things too along the way that I probably didn't make the always make the right decision or whatever. But there's a lot of unfairness towards me, that things that I endured, and I wouldn't necessarily want to go through them again. But I am grateful that I endured those things and went through those things, and you know what God tells us in His words, that He'll take that very place of pain, and He'll heal that, and then use that to help us speak into the lives of others. And through the years, I've been able to, whether it be other ministers or whatnot, I've been able to help them walk through their own painful experiences, in part because of what I endured and went through. And you know, I can't say that as at the time I was going through it with the best attitude. I certainly wasn't going through looking at it at that time with that lens of gratitude. But as time, as healing came, and as I continued forward, I don't know how many times I've been able to give thanks and just truly be grateful that I did go through those things so that I could be of a better help to someone else.
Absolutely.
I heard a speaker one time, he described it as exactly what you just described, but when he was asked a question, he gave it in a very brief statement. And then they asked, if you could tell the people here one thing today, if you could summarize it, what would it be? And he said, never waste a pain. Never waste a pain. And then they said, what do you mean? And he described it just like what you talked about. You go through something that you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel when that's happening, but years removed when you're able to, you never waste what you learned. You would never go through what you went through, but you would never give back what you learned. Absolutely. You know? Yeah. So, you know, I thought that was pretty powerful, but it was exactly what you just described. So, well, we're going to start pulling this thing to a close and get ready to tie this up. We have one question that we always kind of finish with, and we wanted to ask you, and I just wanted to kind of get your input for people, because for one, not every department has chaplains. Mm-hmm. And then there are, you know, as we've had an ability to step into kind of a regional response in the last year or so, a year, 2 years, we walk into departments who have no idea what a chaplain's role are or whatever that is. How has SHIELD been an asset to you and to your fellow officers, and how, if somebody from another department who has no experience with chaplains, if they come and say, is this even worth doing? Is this even worth these guys stepping into? What would you say?
Man, you guys have been invaluable. And I've, from the rooftops, I will shout it a million times. Anyone that I get a chance to talk to, I talk to about you guys at my church regularly. Just what you provide for officers is indispensable, right? Officers are struggling. They lack sometimes that foundation, and maybe they even have that foundation that I was talking about, right? But we're meant to be interpersonal and social and to do life together. And so you guys are able to, you know, maybe an officer doesn't go to church or go seek help, or you guys go to them. And that's the powerful thing that you guys do, is because you guys don't sit back and wait for people to come to you. You're out there with your outreach. You're riding in cars with officers. You're just there. And the best, we say this in law enforcement all the time, the best ability is availability. And that's what you guys have. And that's what you guys bring to the table. And I've seen it time and time and time again. And it's really been a blessing and a joy to share a building with you guys here, just because I get to see you more regularly and we get to interact, and I get to hear and see the things that you guys do in officers' lives and their spouses' lives. And that's the powerful aspect too, is that you guys don't just leave it at the department. You guys are reaching out to family. You guys are reaching out to community stakeholders. You guys are visiting businesses and churches and everything in the area. And your impact has been huge. And I don't know that you'll ever really understand what your impact's been. We may never, none of us may. But I thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for all the stuff you guys do, the help you give officers, and to any agency that's looking into something like this, I would encourage it 1,000 times over, just because most officers aren't going to voluntarily go seek mental health treatment or a counselor, or maybe they're not set up in the right way at home to have the interpersonal communication with their spouse or significant other to heal and work together and grow in their faith and in their marriage. And the work that you guys do will strengthen all those relationships and really arm us to navigate this job in a way that's healthy.
And I want to say too, I don't ask that question, and we don't ask that question looking for accolades or looking for things for us to boast about. We say that because we want you guys, like, we can share why we're passionate about it all the time, but when you hear it from people like you who have experienced it and watched it, you know, it's different. Like we talked about, like we can do a podcast all day, but when they hear it from an officer, like statistically, we've even seen our numbers go up when we interview officers, just bottom line, sure, because they want to hear from people who are walking in their shoes, you know, bottom line, you know?
Right.
And so we appreciate that, man. It is our joy to serve you all. Yeah. We love doing what we do. And so it's a joy for us.
And to the point you just said about, you know, you're not looking for accolades and gratitude, understandable, I get that. But I will say, you know, in the whole gratitude journey I went on, right, the whole basis for this conversation, you know, I was looking in every aspect about gratitude and the power it has. There's a guy, Huberman, does a Huberman podcast or whatever, and he talks about gratitude and the re-networking of, like, your neural pathways, right, and how gratitude affects that. Yep. And what he said, and I think this is important in regards to what you said, is that when we're reconditioning our neural pathways to deal, you know, to look at things through a lens of gratitude, just verbal affirmations about what we're grateful for or whatever doesn't really cut it unless we do it a whole lot. But he said it's exponentially more impactful and more helpful to hear gratitude and affirmation for things that you've done for someone. And so I would encourage your listeners to tell people, like, be open and share what you're grateful for about those people. Share the things, the impacts people have had in your life. And so the fact that you guys gave me that opportunity here, I know you're not listening for it, but it is impactful. And I would encourage everyone to go out and just, who cares if you think you sound corny, tell everyone what you're grateful for and the impact they have in your life, because you're going to change people's lives that way.
Mm. Well, and while we're thinking of gratitude and giving thanks for things, I want to tell everybody I'm very grateful for Ryan's patience with me one day. He had asked me about, hey chap, I'm getting ready to go. Tomorrow I'm going to go visit a family, and you know, I won't get into details of the situation, but this family had endured a lot, and you were going to go and just and visit with them, check in with them, and you asked me if I would go along. You knew they would appreciate a chaplain being there, and I'm like, yeah, man, I'm all about it. Thank you for this opportunity. And he said, well, I'll come by and pick you up. You know, you don't live far from me, chap. And I said, great. So I'm out back on my, that next day on my rider mower, just, working away, mowing grass. And, my wife comes down. It's like, hey, there's somebody just pulled up in a truck out in front. And I was like, I looked up, I'm like, huh, why is Brady here? And then it dawned on me, oh, whoops. And I'm like, hey, I'm gonna need about 15 minutes. Yeah. We're going to make this real quick. If you give me 15 minutes, I'll get cleaned up, and we'll go visit this family and go do some good work.
Yes.
But, you were so chill about it. you know, honestly, if the situation would have been reversed, I probably would have been like, I mean, what a knucklehead. Like, you know, we just talked about this, like, you know, and I hate being late and all this kind of stuff. And you're just like, yeah, that's fine. No worries. And that's like, yeah.
Brady said, good.
Wow. Yeah, good. Yeah.
He's glad he's late.
That's right. Yeah.
I did notice there's a couple of dents in the dash. No.
I'm probably in a couple of those signs just to get, like, in the photo booth I'm going to get for Darren. And then when things start to happen, good. I'm going to hold it up. It just says good. So he can have it. So, well, man, seriously, from our heart, thank you for making time to come sit down with us. We really appreciate it a whole lot. I really feel like this is going to be a game changer for a lot of people.
Awesome.
I really do. And I'm super excited to hear about the kind of get prepared for the feedback we're going to get from this. I'm really excited about it. So thank you for making time. Really Absolutely. Appreciate it. Thank you for living the way you do. Appreciate that. Even though I'm just starting to get to know you, like I've even noticed even in the building, just the way you carry yourself. It's just different, man. Yeah. And I appreciate that very
Absolutely.
Much.
So, thank you all for having me. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's
been well, guys, it's been a great episode. And thank you all for listening in. We'll catch you back on the next episode of the Shield Armory. Thanks for spending time today with us on the Shield Armory. We hope this episode brought encouragement, insight, and a reminder that you're not alone out there. Whether you're on the road, behind the desk, on dispatch, or at home, know that your service matters and you are seen. If this episode helped you in any way, share it with someone you feel it could be an encouragement to. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Until next time, stay safe, stay grounded, and as always, watch your six.